Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tea Time History Chat Live. I hope you are all well. Today, I'm going to be talking about, we're going to do a little bit of Shakespeare because it is, we're close to the anniversary of his birth stroke death. And also, I was very lucky to be invited to a place called Roden Abbey, which I went to yesterday. So I'm going to tell you a bit about that as well. So I hope you are all well. As you can see, I have a new setup, which I will be talking about in a bit, because I'm very excited. Good morning to everyone I can see who's already joining. Hello, particularly to Deborah and Melissa. I hope you are well. Welcome also if you are watching on Instagram. So I'm streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Instagram, I apologize. I'm not able to monitor the comments as well as I am on Facebook and YouTube. You could switch over to me on youtube.com/British History. That would be lovely too. Welcome Nina, watching over there in Germany. I've also got some interviews to tell you about. I did another historian interview this morning, which I think you're going to really enjoy. I'm not sure when that was going to be published, but anyway, I will let you know. Hello, Lainey Mac. Hi, Laurie. So you might notice also that I have, I've done my hair as well. Thank you, Melissa. Yes, I forgot about that. Oh, it's all changed. So I have my new mic and headphones. Joe Rogan, eat your heart out. I did actually have a look. Who's the biggest podcasters and what mic do they use? Anyway, so initially I must say a big thank you to all of you who support me. Because that is how I can start to improve my equipment and hopefully the quality of what I am doing for you. So I'm hoping you can hear me. This actually has turned up at a perfect time because they are literally ripping up the road outside of my window and putting a new one down. The house is rocking, but hopefully you can't actually tell or hear any of the noise. So it's perfect timing. Hi Costas, hi Linda, hi Marianne. I want to say a big thank you because it is your support, especially to you who are members of my Patreon, and I know a lot of you here are. You are the ones who help me get things like this and pay for things like this. So I need to say thank you to Marianne, Deborah, Hannah, Broom, Angie, and Rebecca, who've all become patrons in the last couple of weeks since I've been with you. And I know some of you have, some of the new members of my Patreon and existing ones have taken advantage of being able to ask historians their own questions. And that was something I've done about three this month. So thank you very much for your contributions. This morning, I have interviewed Gareth Streeter. He is the author of this book, Arthur, Prince of Wales, Henry VIII's Lost Brother. So, of course, we've been talking about Arthur Tudor. So fascinating interview. I know I say that about them all, but I only interview people who I think are going to be interesting. So I suppose that stands to reason. We talked about Arthur's, the circumstances around Arthur's birth, the links to the Arthurian legend. Where does that go? It sort of disappears after he's born. Where does that go? Where Arthur lived, the awkwardness of the proxy wedding to Catherine of Aragon, what happens when Catherine turns up, what happens when Arthur dies. And then, so the main part of the interview, obviously, that will be available to everyone. And then we go on to ask, I went on to ask Gareth the questions which my patrons had put forward. Brilliant ones, like how did Arthur's education differ from Henry VIII's and sort of why? And there was all sorts. I can't remember them all now. I'm sorry, but they were really, really fascinating. And you'll be able to see that when I publish that interview. Nina says no noise. Good. So you can't hear. They are massive machines outside. I have to say it's quite impressive when you watch. It's not great because we're in a cul-de-sac. So we're at the end of the road and we cannot leave. So it's a good job it's my filming day today because I didn't need to go anywhere. That's all good, isn't it? So the other thing for patrons, and of course, if you're not already a member of my Patreon and you would like to be, we would love to see you there. You go to Patreon. www.bbc.com/British History. You get to watch the extended interviews. You get to ask questions for future historians. I would always give you a week or two's notice of wanting some questions. And we have Historical Book Club. That's another thing. And behind me is our next book, Dr. Nicola Tallis's book about Margaret Beaufort. It's called The Fateful Life of the Tudor Matriarch. I think I might have changed the words a little bit there. But anyway, that is our book. The next meeting is on the 12th of May. I won't be here next week, but I am going to publish a video for next week so that I'm not leaving you too much, because obviously last week I was away. I'll talk a little bit about that. Next week I'm away on the Anne Boleyn tour, then I'm back for a week, then we do another Anne Boleyn tour. So in between the two Anne Boleyn tours will be book club. If you want to follow us on that tour, I will be posting on social media as much as I can, usually on Instagram mainly. And if you're a member of Patreon, again, you will get to, not straight away, but you will get to see the talks which happen on that tour as well. So though, for today, Shakespeare and Roden Abbey. Oh, I did say I'd mention last week. So you may have seen I was at Sudley Castle. We went with Samantha Rees from the Tudor Royalty Experience, me and the History After Dark girls. So Dr. Kat and Catherine Brooks. I will tell you later as well what we're up to tonight, because it's a bit different tonight what we're doing on History After Dark. But yeah, so we were at Sudley Castle last week dressing up. I got to wear the gown that's based on the portrait that was once thought to be Catherine Howard. And now if you say that, then people get very shirty about it. It used to be thought to be Catherine Howard. Yeah. Well, anyway, that one. And I have to say, it's actually very comfortable, the dress. The big sleeves that you see on the Anne Boleyn dresses, whether they sort of, they drape down, none of those, straight. It was great. I could eat my cream tea, jam first, then the cream, without having to take the sleeves off, which I did have to do with the other ones. So that was good. I enjoyed myself very much. And I'm sorry if none of my patrons won Sam's competition. I tried for you. You could win a whole dress. If I wasn't there to have helped pick the winner, I would certainly have been taking part in that competition. That'd have been fabulous. And of course, I'm seeing Sam again next week, because she is, and in 3 weeks' time, because we are out on the Anne Boleyn tour, and she comes to dress up the guests. Melissa, you've done it. Linda, you've done it. And you looked absolutely amazing. Nina, were the dresses heavy? They're not as heavy. It's like a wedding dress. They're not as heavy as they look, because they're on you. So they are overall, I suppose, heavy, but the weight is distributed when you have the dress on. I have swimmer's shoulders. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it, which means that the dress I'm wearing isn't made specifically for me, they can be quite tight around my my shoulders and my upper arms and my armpits. So they can get a bit uncomfortable after a while. But I've got biceps. What can I say? I've just got to get my own dress. Part of my problem, clearly they are wonderful, and so they're a big investment. I can't choose what colour. I can't choose what style. So one day I'll get my own. Laurie says the French hoods were lovely too. Yes. I didn't realise that we were chatting, and Samantha, who makes all the dresses, Dr. Kat, of course, was there. They're talking about the fact that we still don't know, and probably never will know. This is maybe a question for Ileary Lynn when I speak to her again, is whether the French hoods were up or down, flat on the head, or would have stood up the way we tend to wear them. And I think the reason that there is the speculation, I suppose, is it's a little bit like in movies today, and people talk about historical costumes. The thing is, it's the look. You have to be able to see they have to be able to present them in a way so that you can actually see that someone's got the hood on properly and blah, 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 blah. And it could be that that was what was happening in portraits, that there's sort of more of an emphasis on the height of the hood, whereas in reality, they might have been further back. But anyway, we don't know. I think they're very flattering. I like the fact that you can just cover up your hair when it's not working. Bring back hats. Melissa says, I know every time she posts a dress, I think that's the best one. To be fair, that's absolutely where I go. Maria, to be frank, I would love to try one on for the experience, but not own one. Well, you've got to, I mean, where are you going to put it? That's another thing that I keep thinking, where would I put it? they're big concerns. So yeah, but it was so fun. And like I say, I'll see Deb again in a week, where she's dressing up some guests, quite a few actually are dressing up on the Anne Boleyn tour next week, and then in another 2 weeks after that we're back, and she'll be doing it again. So I know a few of you, Maria, as well, that you've all been on tour with me, but if you want to follow that tour, I will be doing as much posting as I can. Obviously I am there to host and pay attention, but I will post as much as I can. It will probably be a bombardment at the end of the day. Manda says, oh, with my colouring, recommend cool tones, blues or greys. See, but then I might change my hair colour again and then I'll need a different colour. Oh, it's all. Actually, the first dress that Samantha ever dressed me in was the silvery blue one that she has. I really like that. I like them all. But I did turn a corner at Hever. We were dressing up at Hever Castle and I turned a corner and this little three-year-old, I would have said, him and his little friend were at the ice cream stand and he just happened to look round and then he's like tugging at the sleeve of his little friend and they both look round and they're just like, I think it's the blue was a bit Cinderella-like. And yes, Linda, you wore the silvery blue one too. And I'm thinking Cinderella, Disney Cinderella, really. And the little children just adored it, which made me very teary, you know, in a nice way, in a lovely way. So, yeah. Well, maybe I'll get one, Manda. But I also like the English gowns. So I'm going off topic now, but I like the English gowns where they look like they're very comfy and a little bit easier to put on if you're on your own. Maria asks, serious question. That's okay. Since you mentioned them, the gowns are so voluminous and look so structured. I'm wondering how Samantha manages to transport so many of them. She actually, do you want to know the secret? She transports them in boxes. They fold up into sort of big plastic boxes that you might use for storage. And so a big box each, but that's how they transport them. And the material she uses, you know, she's very experienced in what she does, and she uses the best material to look correct, fall correct, and they actually will all go in the washing machine if you've got a washing machine big enough. But there you are. Linda says at Hever, several little girls and older gentlemen asked to take pictures with me. It was so fun. So one of the things that when guests dress up at Hever Castle, when we're at Hever, we've dressed up at a few different places, but one of the things that Samantha always says to warn people is it will take you 5-6 times as long to get from A to B, wherever you're wanting to go to, because people will stop you and they'll want photographs with you. It's so fun. Honestly, it brings such a smile to people's faces. When we were at Sudley last week, people just light up when they see you. And it's so easy to strike up a conversation with people. And it's really It's such a wonderful thing. And Samantha provides that experience for people who want to just do that as well. She does it on my tours for me. But you can actually contact Samantha if you were here and wanted to do a whole day. Sudley Castle is going to be one of the venues that she does it at. And you get to dress up and have cream teas and see a falconry show. And really wonderful. Amanda says, the dresses are surprisingly collapsible. I've had to haul many a piece of garb around the country when I worked on the Renaissance Fair circuit. Yeah. Melissa's doing it at Thornbury. Wonderful. And yes, Maria, yes, they can go in the washing machine. Exactly. They would be a nightmare to hand wash. So she does it. They are authentically created with some modern touches to make sure that they're actually something you can wear, use, rewear. Laurie says it's a wonderful feeling and so immersive in the environment. Laurie's dressed up as well, looks wonderful in her gown. So that was great. And like I say, you can see in next week, we've got quite a few people dressing up and then again in later on in May. So I will publish a video next week. I'm going to pre-record it and put that out next week. So I am on tour and I will be here. Last year it was funny because people were like, I'm watching you live, but I know you're not there. Yeah, I'm going to be, I'm going to do that, be organised. I have two videos as well, I should mention, on YouTube that you can watch now. One, I think I mentioned it last week, I must have done, my interview with Kate Clements from Churchill War Rooms. And have a look, I've overlaid, if you haven't watched it already, I've overlaid the interview with pictures from the war rooms. And I think I put it on the thumbnail because and I did a short from it as well with sort of the words, they just locked the doors and left, and they did. And this is, it's a time capsule, the Churchill War Rooms. It's amazing. And the maps, so I've been able to get up close with them in Patreon. I shared some photos and prompt me if you want any more. The maps in the famous map room are the maps they used. There are pricks all the way through the maps. And if you have had relatives who were in like ship convoys, which I did in the Second World War, then there is a pin mark on that map which demonstrates where your relative was at a certain time, because they were tracking these ship convoys. My pops had a great, I can't remember the ship he was on, but my pop had nine lives. He must have been a cat in a previous life, and he brought all his lives with him because he got hit. His ship got hit, and the bomb bounced off it. Honestly, and that's just one escape of death that my pop had. But it's just fascinating to know that on that map there would be a pinpoint that was following his convoy at some point. So anyway, that's available for you. The other video available to go 1,000 years back from that, and it is a walking tour or virtual tour that I did originally for patrons a couple of years ago of St Mary's Priory Church and Odders Chapel, both at Deerhurst. So that is available for you to watch on YouTube now as well. And there's some incredible survivors. I think they're 1,000 years old. It's really quite amazing. I have a special thank you. Sorry, I know I will get onto the topic of today soon. I have a special thank you, though, that I want to give to Lee and Ian Armstrong. Behind me, I've left it behind me. I don't know if you can't just about, you can just about see it on the table behind me. It's a poster, and it's there because I'm trying to flatten it out. When I did my interview with Nathan Armin Some of you might have, if you've watched that already, and you'll know that at the end, I discuss beer with him because history and beer are interests that we share. And he surprised me by talking about lager. Oh, I was like, excuse me. And I mentioned that there's this poster that I had seen from a brewery called, it's the Witchwood, I think, brewery. Anyway, they brew a beer called Hobgoblin. And there had been a poster that I'd seen in a pub that basically had the words, what are you scared of, lager boy, tasting something, which was, I thought, inspired, and I've loved it, and I could not get hold of this poster. Lee has tracked down that poster for me, and it has come today. So a massive, massive thank you. Lee is in Australia, I should point out. Lee and Ian are in Australia, and they have sent me this poster that I've been trying to get hold of for 10 years. So I'm very excited. I'm going to get it framed, and you will probably see it adorning my wall as soon as I can do that. So anyway, that was very important to give that thank you. Right, I've mentioned book club. Also, Estelle Perronc's interview is coming up in May. I've spoken to Estelle about her new book about the French connection, Anne Boleyn, in her time in France, the continuing French connection. That is, I think you'll find, I'm going to say it's interesting again. It's fascinating because I don't interview people who aren't interesting. There you go. But things like the French pursuing the divorce petition, basically, or still petitioning the Pope to recognise the marriage between Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn, and to annul the one with Catherine of Aragon, really quite far into, really, almost to when Anne's downfall happened. So that's just part of what we're talking about. That is going to be available in May to patrons a few days earlier. And also, obviously, they get the extended version, but there's a lot in the main one as well. Okay, Stratford. Let's go to Stratford, people, because it's the birth. Well, yesterday was the birthday of this man, William Shakespeare. And people like to round. What I'm saying, it was his birthday. No, it was his death date, actually. We know when he dies. He dies on the 23rd of April. What year does he die? I should have looked that one up. He's 52. Oh, okay, someone do the maths. He's 52 years old. He's born in 1564. So, okay, can't do it while I'm talking. So the reason that people like to assume that, well, not assume, it's a nice tidy up, isn't it, if he's born and dies on the same day. We have a few people who manage that. Elizabeth of York managed that. Catherine Gray managed that. But when Shakespeare's born, there are records newly, well, it's sort of a few decades old, that records of baptisms are now a legal requirement brought in by Cromwell under Henry VIII. But not necessarily of the child's birthday, the christening day, the baptism day, which would happen on the nearest holy day to the child's birth. And William is the third child of John Shakespeare and Mary Arden, you'd have heard of. And we know that he is christened or baptized on the 26th of April, 1564. So that would have been the next sort of holy day following his birth. And he is born in this house up here on the left. It's called now Shakespeare's, 1616, Marianne, thank you. So he dies on the 23rd of April, 1616. Yes, Nina, thank you. He's 52 when he died. Yeah, I knew that bit and couldn't do the maths. Oh, dear. So he's born in this house in the top left of this slide. It's on Henley Street in Stratford. If you visit Stratford, and a few of you, I don't know if any of you have visited Stratford with me. I've taken groups there. All of it is walkable. So you can go from his birthplace, you can go past his schoolhouse, you can go past the site of New Place, which I'll come back to, all the way to Holy Trinity, where he is buried, which I will also come on to. You can walk it. And Stratford is a lovely, interesting and a good place for food. There's the River Avon there. Did I ever, I don't know if I've covered it on here. I think I've covered it in other places, but the name Stratford, so it's Stratford upon Avon. There's another Stratford, which is in London. Don't get them confused, especially if you're making travel plans. And Stratford is thought to come from Old English, is it? It was straight. It's sort of street, and ford is a crossing in the river. So this is Stratford, the street crossing the river at Avon. So he's born on Henley Street in the house owned by his father, John Shakespeare. His father is various things at various times, but he's a glove maker. So if you visit the house, you will see the his sort of workshop reset up. And this is the house that almost went to America under, basically P.T. Barnum of Barnum and Bailey circus fame wanted to buy the house and take it down bit by bit and reconstruct it back in America. And there was a movement by some really prominent figures at the time. I think Prince Albert got involved. Charles Dickens got involved, and they interceded. And the way they did that was they managed to raise money to buy the house, and an Act of Parliament was passed which set up the Charitable Trust, which was then allowed to buy and run the house on behalf of the people of England, if you like. And that was the origins of the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust, which is still the trust, Charitable Trust, who runs it today. Shakespeare's birthplace was already attracting a lot of interest, and people would come. And there is the original window out of his bedroom, the room that they think he was born in, had people's signatures scratched into it, loads of them. Absolutely loads of them. This window now is inside to protect it. Obviously, can you imagine leaving it in situ? Oh, and then somebody lobs a rock through it or something. Sometimes it happens in England. And that would have been just awful, wouldn't it? So that is now inside. And you can see that as well if you went to see it. But I thought that was fascinating. It's like an impromptu visitor book. The second picture on the right-hand side, that is Stratford's Guildhall. And the top floor of there was the grammar school. It must have been an Edward VI grammar school. It's not now, I don't think. I went to it. Yes, you can visit the inside, Nina. Yeah, absolutely. You can go inside the birthplace. It's all fitted out for visiting public. Some of the houses. See, some of the places you go to, and some of it's office, some of it's on the visitor trail. I think pretty much the whole house is on the visitor trail, as in you can explore it. The Guildhall, you can also go in. So the Guildhall with the school, the lower floor, so ground floor for us in the UK, first floor for you somewhere else, is the Guildhall. And that would have been where the town mayor, which at one point or known as bailiff, sometimes and Shakespeare's father, John Shakespeare, was town bailiff at some point. This is where they would meet, I don't know, take in taxes, whatever. One of the things they would do is watch travelling players. They would watch whatever performance they wanted to put on and give the yay or nay as to whether that could happen. So you can surmise that this being where John Shakespeare is working, that this is being where William Shakespeare is going to school, that potentially he sees travelling players, and that could be one of his inspirations for what he eventually goes on to do. Maria says, I'm pretty sure if you're trying to etch your name on one of those windows nowadays, it would amount to vandalism and the very least defacing. I said a very wrong word then. Sorry. Defacing a historic building, whether you're famous or not. Indeed. Yes. Oh, these were in the good old days. Right. So the Victorians, I was talking about this with Gareth Streeter this morning. They become very interested in history. And I'd like to delve in to that with somebody, actually, because I think it must have been a mix of there's some sort of nostalgia movement. I'm not sure why. But you also have the dawn of sort of the weekend, this idea that you can have a day off. People have got maybe a little bit of spare money. And transport systems. So you can go on the train or you can go on the tram. Tram system and rail system was a lot more extensive than it is today. So people could get places. And they would go to places like Stratford. Stratford is probably a slightly different example in that that was a bit of a draw for, you know, people like Charles Dickens. I mean, they're wanting to follow in the footsteps of their heroes, aren't they? But I've spoken before about places like Boscobel and Roxeter, where Victorian tourists would take pieces of souvenirs of wherever they were visiting, because it wasn't maybe it hadn't been anticipated that that's what people would want to do. I don't know. So this picture, like I say, the second one, so the right-hand side on the top is where Shakespeare went to school. Like I said, it was a grammar school education. They would be expected to be there 6 days a week from the age of 7 years old, from 6 a.m. in the morning till 5 or 6 at night, depending on whether it's summer or winter. It was free to go, but what you have to remember is that most families needed the income that their children could bring in from working. And so although you didn't have to pay for the education, you needed to be able to afford for your child not to go to work. So we know from that Shakespeare's family could let him go to school. It was highly disciplined, you know, strict practices, as you'd probably expect at that kind of time. It's boys only. And it's called grammar school. I mean, they would deconstruct language, learn to construct language, arguments, probably very, very useful skill, isn't it? Probably debated. That's something I think that should be brought into all schools, that skill of being able to debate without losing your temper, all that kind of thing. They would do Latin, Greek, so they would learn from classical texts. They would learn from the New Testament for Greek, classical texts in Latin. So through that, he would have been exposed to mythology and, you know, the classics, which you then see coming through in his own work as well. Rhetoric, yes, thank you, Amanda. The picture at the bottom, this is actually a house that I saw in Leinster, I think it is, a few years ago. And as you can see, it is a five gabled house. This gives you some idea as to the size and look of the house which Shakespeare had at New Place. So when he returns from London, he's made money, not from his writing necessarily, but from the fact that he's a part owner of the Players and of the theatre. He's made a lot of money. He comes back and he has this five gabled house at New Place. Eventually that is torn down. But I saw this house and took a picture so that I could give you some idea of what New Place might have looked like. Yeah, how do you envisage a five gabled house? Well, there you are. There's one. It's quite large. It's quite big, isn't it? And actually, when you see the space in Stratford where his house was, it doesn't look like it could have fit quite as well, but there you are. And of course, New Place is where he died as well. So he is born and he dies in Stratford, and he's buried at Holy Trinity Church. All of these photos are my own. I'm very proud of that. As you can see, the one on the right hand side, I can't actually remember whether I was there very early in the morning or very late in the evening. Either way, I enjoyed taking that photograph. If you can brave the swans, then there are little jetties into the river, which go into it in a short way. And there is one which you can stand on and look up towards the church. And then obviously the one on the left, I was there. I was very lucky to be there on a very nice sunny day. And the one in the middle is Shakespeare's grave itself. I meant to put a picture of the bust, which is he's buried along with his wife, his daughter, Susanna Hall, and her husband. They had Hall's Place that was closed to the public. I'm not sure if it's reopened, but they closed in the pandemic and didn't bother reopening it. And they're all buried at the altar because of their standing in the community, not because he would go on to become famous. Because we have to remember, he's he's a writer in his time. People would have known of him, but it's certainly not the level of fame and notoriety, is that the right word, maybe, for that he has gained. Hence, he has good standing in the community. I think he had, I can't remember what role he had as well. So there is actually a bust of him created still during the lifetime of people who would have known him. I think his wife might have still been alive when it was made. Either way, the reason I was going to share a picture, and I'm sorry that I've not, but you can probably Google it. The bust, I think it's now coloured back in, but at some point, someone got very, there was some move to kind of whitewash everything in churches, as you'd have probably noticed if you come and visit here, sort of to see a very colourful church or to see one where decoration has survived. Either it's been uncovered or it's quite a surprise that it's sort of still there. And for some reason, this bust, I can't remember if somebody cleaned it. Did someone clean it? Either way, the original colouring was wiped off. And if you've ever, well, when you see a bust that has no colouring, and you realise actually how much of the detail came in the painting of it. In the Anglo-Saxon video that I've recently, well, a couple of days ago, released about St. Mary's Priory, in there is a, it looks like a flat plaque up on the wall, just with an outline of a figure. And that would have been the Virgin Mary and Jesus. All the detail came in the painting of it. And Oh, thank you, Melissa. She's loving my new microphone. Apparently, I can't shout. It'll just cut me off. So that's not that I shout very often, but but yeah, any loud noises, like if they start ripping up the road again. So this bust would have had his features. Anyway, so it's been restored to what is the best, as to what it would have looked like before. Maria, I'm racking my brain to remember the term that describes the architecture wall, architecture and wall feature with the wood and black that you see everywhere in Stratford-upon-Avon. Yeah, not just there. No, you're right. When I tell you about Roden Abbey, maybe I can tell you a bit more about it. But yeah, Amanda says half timber. Yeah, and they're half timber. And of course, the panels are wattle and daub. The black, of course, comes from, the Victorians thinking that that the wood would have been black. I think I'd have to ask somebody who's much more into architectural history whether they did that out of thinking that's how it looked or whether they're trying to protect the wood. But the wood would have been more silver. If you see the oak left to weather, it goes, is it oak? It goes more of a silver colour anyway. The black and white is more of an envisaged idea. And actually, this will actually link very nicely onto the next topic that I wanted to talk about, which was Roden Abbey, because this is where, perfect, look at this, black and white. This is where I was yesterday. I was very fortunate to be invited by the owner and the lady who runs it to go and see the house. It is in Herefordshire, which is not too far away from me. So we're sort of talking, but sort of where England and Wales meet, sort of the lower part of that and towards Wales. Google it. So I was there near a place called Bromyard. And this is did I take any more pictures of the outside? Yes, I did. This is it's actually a bit of a mix of mock Tudor arts and craft mansion. And so you can see obviously this revival, this is mid-19th century, and this idea of the black and white. Melissa, do I have any thoughts about the fact that the original bust had him leaning on a bag of wool and it was replaced later by the current one? Oh, do you know, so what have they put there now? He was leaning on a bag of wool before, and is it like a writing desk now or something like that? What's he on now? It's incredible how much detail is lost. You'd think there'd be more structure in the actual sort of bust, but in the actual plaster work, but it doesn't appear to be. Well, that's just my interpretation, but okay. So here we are at Roden Abbey. Like I said, built in the mid-19th century, arts and craft, sort of stroke mock Tudor. And the actual history of the site goes back to the Norman Conquest, book and quill, Melissa says. Yeah, so I've not heard about that, but I would like to look into that. I would like to look at that, because that sounds like that makes some sense. Although I don't know. Be interested. Interesting. So Amanda says the wood would have been treated with tar, but not in Tudor times. So that's the thing. I don't know when that started, or whether that was an assumption. But yeah, apparently it's one of the myths anyway. But when we get to architects who are looking at doing mock Tudor buildings in the arts and craft movement, you have your black and white, which looks beautiful. And so this, like I say, this site at Roden Abbey goes back to the Norman Conquest. And there was a house initially on this site. This is the second house. There is a lake, which also made up a moat, part of a moat. And in the middle of this lake is an island. Now, it's not very big. I don't know how to describe it. I was surprised at how small it was. And the reason I was surprised is because that is thought to be, well, there is evidence that there was a chapel on this island. So literally this island may well have been the chapel, and it was dedicated to St. Anne. So it's Catholic, and it's a Catholic chapel built after the Reformation. Thus, on a island in the middle of a small lake, probably with everything growing up around it, so you can't see it because it, you're not allowed to have a Catholic chapel. Oh, there you go. Amanda says the tar came in the Victorian era. They used it for railroads. Yeah. They're using tar on the road outside right now. I can smell it. They're relaying the road. It's going to be lovely. I'm going to be able to skate on it or something. I don't know. Maria says, I tried Googling it because I specifically recall there being a term for it. You broke Google. Everyone should give a go at breaking Google from time to time. Fabulous. So, yes, so the site goes back, like I say, to Norman times. It had this post-Reformation chapel. Now, this little island is again overgrown, and they're looking at clearing that all, because what they want to be able to do is obviously preserve whatever is there and preserve it well. They have had excavations on the site before with and found tiles, so you know, things that aren't just going to happen on either a naturally occurring island or an island that's been built for the ducks or whatever. So it does look very interesting. If I show you inside a little bit, so there is a very definite, what's the next one? Yeah. So you've got the family living area, which is fairly cozy, actually. A cozy mansion, you know, my type of mansion. You've got like a lovely entrance hall with a fireplace and the dog. They have Great Danes there. Great, this huge dog called Bentley. It's gorgeous. Sort of sitting room with a piano, a dining room. And then there would have been a billiard room and a smoking room. That say would have been the billiard room is now the new kitchen. Excuse me. And then there is and upstairs there's the bedrooms. Now they have a plan of the downstairs. They know exactly which room was for which purpose. But there is a absolute definite delineation between the family side and the servant side, hence why you would know that it's not an actual Tudor building. There's probably lots of other clues as well. But of course, the Tudors didn't hide their servants. The Victorians did. So I don't know if you can tell from this photo here on the right, but you go from carpeted and wood panelled to tiled absolutely everywhere. The floor is tiled, the walls are tiled, and there is in that corridor, the corridor that you can see there on the photograph is the servants' corridor. Off there is the butler's office, the servants' hall where they would have eaten, a pantry. There's all sorts of places like that. And to the right, where you can't quite see, the servant staircase, because of course they didn't use the main staircase. So they have their own staircase. And here, so there was a couple who lived here, and when they died, they didn't have any children. The place was rented out, and then it was eventually sold. But because there was no updates on the house, some of the original features have been able to be kept. And this light fitting here, this is the glass, I think, is fairly unique as well. But it's a French design. She's half angel, half mermaid. Here you are. Oh yes, so when I hit the big lottery, I'm building an arts and craft house. I thought you'd said there, I've hit the lottery, I am building arts and crafts house. I was about to say, oh, check out some ideas for here. But you can put these in your memory bank and in your scrapbook of design ideas for when that happens, because it's going to happen. They've got some of these original features, absolutely beautiful. And there's a few people that I thought you might find. There's quite a few people associated with the Abbey, which I'll do a blog about at some point. But two of the most notable ones I thought you'd be interested in, both female. There is a lady who lived there in the 1940s. She was a lady called Ada Mary Chapman. And you can Google her. I think her brother might be the sort of slightly bigger character, George Chapman. He created Chapman Animal Dealers and Circus in 1922, but he died in 1935 and Ada took over the circus. First ever female circus owner, leader. She took the welfare of her animals seriously. I mean, you can have a debate about whether a circus can ever be good for the animals, but she had a shop near the Bullring in Birmingham. She went to, yeah, Melissa is a bit of a mashup. She went to the Amazon herself to go and find animals. So apparently source her own animals. So apparently she was the first woman to kind of navigate the Amazon or something like that. And she bought the Abbey after the breakout of the Second World War, because she wanted to find a place where she could have the animals and keep them safe. And because it's the war, fuel is short. And so it wasn't unusual to see the elephants pulling a plow or two and getting some exercise and having some fun. She drove a Rolls Royce. So she was doing all right. I mean, this is a 300-acre site, or it was, it's not now. It was a 300-acre site, and she would go down to the local pub, apparently with the monkeys in the back of the Rolls Royce. Now, as an aside, I'm not hearing good things about monkeys. I'm hearing bad things about monkeys. If people have pet monkey, do not go around to their house. Just public health warning. So you have Ada Mary Chapman. She sounds like an incredible soul, always busy, always moving on to the next thing. So she eventually sells the house. And then in the 1960s, there is a family called the Gibbs. And they have a number of children. One of them is a girl called Josephine Gibbs. And she goes off to Switzerland, I think, for finishing school. And there she learns to ski. And the 1960 Winter Olympics is coming up in California, wasn't it? Squaw Valley, which was created especially for the Olympics. And she is asked to ski for the Swiss. So she says, okay, but I better ask the British first. And the British are like, women don't ski. We don't send women skiers to the Olympics. And but she's all right, then I'll go and ski for the Swiss. So at that point they go, no, it's fine, come and ski for us. So she goes to the 1960 Olympics. And apparently the 1960s Olympics is the first one that had an Olympic village, which then, of course, has become tradition to have a whole Olympic village. And Walt Disney was in charge of the opening and closing ceremonies. And that's the origin of the elaborate opening and closing ceremonies that we see. And she was there. And her skis are on the wall of one of the bedrooms that are named after her. So all the bedrooms here, it's a private house, which you can rent out, hire for a weekend. And all the bedrooms are named after someone who is linked and has lived at the Abbey. I should point out the name Abbey. So it taken on the name Roden, but the name Abbey, the add-on of Abbey comes from that chapel to St. Anne, which is thought to have been on the island of the lake. So it was never actually an abbey. I should point that out because that was confusing me to begin with. It's a lovely little place. I've put more photos in Patreon. And I may well be doing some history retreats to there if you're interested. So some very sort of intimate history retreats where we can have the whole place to ourselves. So look out. If you're interested in that, just pop me a line. It'd be helpful to know how much interest there is in that kind of thing. Squaw Valley is now called Palisades Tahoe. Tahoe? Is that how you say it? Tahoe? I can't. I can't say bald. Bald? Anyway. I was telling my partner. He said she can't say the word. So there you go. Tahoe. Am I still getting that right? Tahoe. Palisades Tahoe. Oh, it's okay. Okay, so next week, like I say, I'm going to be on the Anne Boleyn tour and with the lovely Gareth Russell, who is currently incommunicado because he is in the last throes of editing his latest book on King James. Now, last year he gave us little sneak peeks on the tour, on one of the tours of the palace, which wasn't yet at that point published. So, kind of hoping to, maybe not next week. It'll be too fresh, but maybe on the September tour, the Rise of the Tudors that we're doing, we can persuade him maybe to give us a little chapter. But so you can follow the Anne Boleyn tour, you can follow on Instagram. That's where I'll be posting mainly about it. We are spending a day at Hever Castle. We're going after hours around the castle. There are parts of the castle that are currently off bounds that would have been on the normal visitor route that are off bounds from the public. We are getting to see all of those places. So that's cool. We're also going to dine in the Great Hall. We're going to have a banquet in the Great Hall. We're going to go to the Tower of London and have Will join us there, who's a brilliant guide. We're also going to Hampton Court Palace. I'm in Hampton Court Palace with Gareth, the man who's just written the book about the palace, and with Sarah Slater, who knows so much and is constantly doing research on the palace as well. So what a wonderful team we will have. Gareth is giving us talks on this first one of the two Anne Boleyn tours for this year. We also have Professor James Clark joining us and Kate McCaffrey. When we go in a couple of weeks time, so we've got two, one starting on the 30th, so that's next Tuesday with one starting, and then also have one on the 16th of May. On that tour, again, Gareth is with us because Gareth is with us for the entire time. And we will have we'll be having a talk from Tracy Borman on that one, and again Kate McCaffrey, and on both tours also Jay Britton, who's the Tudor songbook. She comes as Anne Boleyn and she gives us a private concert of music which Anne Boleyn would have recognised and possibly probably performed herself. If you want to watch my interview with Jay, we go into sort of how she prepares and how she can read that music and how she knows that she's recreating it faithfully, which is something she absolutely intends and does. That's her aim. And so, like I say, you can follow along both those tours. If you'd like to do that tour, that tour is available now in 2025. We have two tour dates, the 29th of April till the 3rd of May and the 16th of May till the 20th of May. Both of them tie in with significant dates in Anne's downfall. In fact, that actually, it's actually this year and next year, goes over that time frame from the 29th of April, where things start to go very, very wrong for Anne, through obviously till the 19th of May when she's executed. We're touring over that entire time period. But the first tour goes to the Tower of London on the 2nd of May. That is the day that Anne Boleyn is arrested and she's brought to the Tower, never to leave. So we'll be there on the 2nd of May. And the second tour covers the 19th of May, of course, the day she is executed. And we're at the Tower of London for that anniversary as well. So two significant dates in Anne's story. And we are there on the ground where things happened, as well as all the other wonderful stuff that I've talked about. We hire the entire Astor Wing of Hever Castle. It's all to ourselves. We have our own billiards room. No one's played billiards yet. Snooker. I've never known anyone actually. So, you know, there might be a first. We have our own swimming pool. We have our own lawn. We have our own, they call it the music room. There's no music in there. There's a chessboard, some magazines, a fire, and some really nice comfy sofas. We have that. And we have our own dining area and we have talks in there as well. So it's absolutely fantastic. So like I say, if you follow us along on social media, over the next few weeks to watch these tours, this year's tours. But if you want to come along, then the Anne Boleyn tours for 2025 are now on sale. I know some of you are waiting to see what other tours we're putting on as well before you decide. What I can tell you about that is I have a couple in I'm really close to planning stages. One of them Gareth will be heavily involved in, and like I say, he's in the last throes of editing his book at the moment. So when he's done that and I've got hold of him next week and we're on tour together, I will pin him down for dates, and then we'll be much further forward in getting that one out. And the other one, which Gareth won't be involved in, but I have someone wonderful lined up for, is a Roman Britain tour as well. So there are going to be other tours coming out. I will let you know as soon as I can. But like I say, if the Anne Boleyn tour is the one you want to do, you can book onto that already. You can book onto that right now. So thank you ever so much to everyone for joining me today. Like I say, if you're a member of my Patreon, Laurie's just reminded me, you will get to hear the talks. I will record the talks from the tours and I will put them into Patreon. I've still got last year's actually some of last year's to post as well. Reason being, we've had quite a few in there this year, so I didn't want to overwhelm everybody. Maria, I don't have Gareth's new book title. All I know is that it is, it's on James the Sixth of England. Sixth of Scotland, First of England. And from what he's told me, it's. Going to be good. It's going to be very good. So I don't know the title yet, but as soon as I know, he's going to do an interview with me, of course, on his new book as well. So we'll have that to look forward to. So again, if you're a member of my Patreon and you've got some questions about James the Sixth of Scotland, First of England, he also has done talks for. Well, he's got a chapter in his book, and he's done a talk for me before on Anna of Denmark, James's wife. You got Buckingham in there. So if you have any questions that you would like to ask Gareth about those characters, then again, look out in Patreon, patreon.com/British History, and you will get the opportunity to put those questions in. I will post and ask for them. Yes, no, Maria, it's not released yet. He's literally submitting the completed manuscript on the 29th of April, we go on tour on the 30th of April. Hence why I'm not allowed to speak to him until breakfast on the 30th of April. So next Tuesday, he'll probably want to sleep, but he won't. He's very excited about being on tour. And I think it'll be a nice mark. Finish the book, come on tour. How fantastic will that be? Okay, everybody, thank you so much for joining me. It's been lovely to see you today. And I'm back tonight with the History After Dark Girls, 8:15 on History After Dark on YouTube. And tonight we're having a bit of a rant, actually. And next week for History After Dark, because I am away, we have got a show. We're going to pre-record it. It's going to be on Isaac Newton, because we're on our History Heroes series, and we will be looking at him. So you can look out for that as well. But for now, so I'd love to see you next week. Love to see you tonight. I'll sort of see you next week. You can follow me on Instagram, and hopefully I'll see you tonight for History After Dark. All right, everyone, take care, and I'll see you later.